If you think malware is just a virus that steals your password to sell on some dark web message board, you really need to update that mental model immediately.
Oh, absolutely.
Because, I mean, a stolen password is child's play now. We are looking at a class of malware that steals your entire digital life in milliseconds. It packages it up and sells it to a highly specialized criminal supply chain.
Yeah, it's a whole different ballgame.
Right. So today's deep dive is exploring an extensive source document on the evolution of InfoStealer malware, and it proves that our traditional understanding of endpoint security is dangerously outdated.
It really is. We are completely reframing how we look at digital compromise. Because, you know, we've treated malware as a technical nuisance for decades.
Yeah, like a glitch you just fix with an antivirus scan.
Exactly. But the reality on the ground has shifted from, like, technical vandalism to industrialized identity theft. The malware itself isn't the complete crime anymore.
Right. It's just the start.
Yeah, it is merely the reconnaissance and gathering phase for a much, much larger operation.
Okay, let's unpack this. The core thesis of our source is that modern infostealers have mutated way beyond simple credential scraping.
Way beyond.
An infection on your device doesn't just grab a password hash. It harvests a perfect replica of your digital identity. They call it a stealer log.
Right, a stealer log.
And to really understand the severity of this threat, we have to look at the sheer scale of the data being pulled out of devices globally.
The numbers from FortiGuard Labs in the source, they establish a pretty grim baseline. In 2024, logs from systems compromised by InfoStealer malware increased by 500%.
Wow, 500%.
Yeah, and they observed 1.7 billion stolen credential records just being shared in underground forums.
That volume is staggering. It represents a 42% rise in compromised credentials offered for sale. I was actually trying to think of how to visualize this shift in tactics for you.
It's hard to picture, yeah.
Right, because stealing a password the old way, like skimming a massive database breach that used to be like someone stealing a copy of your house key, bad, definitely. But a modern stealer log, it's like someone taking your house key, the code to your alarm system, your daily mail, your schedule, and then wearing a hyper-realistic mask of your face to trick your neighbors.
That is a terrifying image, but it's spot on. What's fascinating here is the mechanism behind that analogy. When we talk about a stealer log, we are really looking at the systematic extraction of context.
Context, right.
Yeah. Modern infostealers don't just look for a text file of passwords. They target the local databases that your browser uses, like the SQLite files utilized by Chrome or Edge.
No, because the browser saves everything now.
Exactly. And because the malware runs under your active user profile, it can query the Windows Data Protection API, for instance. It just simply asks the operating system to decrypt all your stored browser data right on the fly.
Jeez. It literally leverages your own machine's trusted state against you.
Yep.
So it grabs the browser credentials, the saved payment card data, the autofill information. I mean, everything your browser helpfully remembers for you, like your physical address, phone numbers, email accounts.
It goes much deeper than that, actually.
Ooh, really?
Oh, yeah. They pull cryptocurrency wallet information, searching specifically for seed phrases that grant irreversible control over virtual assets. They extract private documents, messaging data.
Oh, wow.
They even take desktop screenshots. They map out your IP address, your system's hardware configuration, and the specific security controls you have installed on your machine.
They just perfectly reconstruct your digital life.
They do. And that contextual package is infinitely more valuable than just an old password from a database breach.
Because it's not just a login anymore.
Right, because the buyer of that stealer log doesn't just have your credentials. They have the exact device fingerprint. To the bank's security servers, the attacker looks exactly like your computer trying to log in.
Man, since this data is so incredibly valuable, it completely changes the economics of how it's collected. It's no longer, you know, a lone hacker in a basement trying to guess your mother's maiden name.
No, not at all.
It's a full corporate supply chain. Reading through the source, the structure of these criminal enterprises is just shockingly professionalized.
It really is an industry now. Infostealers usually reach victims through vectors that look entirely mundane, often bypassing technical filters by relying on social engineering.
Right, like phishing attachments in emails or fake software installers.
Yeah, and poison search results. Cracked applications and game modifications are highlighted as massive vulnerabilities.
Yeah, you might think you're downloading a legitimate browser update or a trendy new AI tool, but the payload is loaded with an info stealer.
Exactly.
Which brings up a detail in the source that I found incredibly confusing at first. The Australian Cybersecurity Center warns that these programs often execute rapidly, collect the info, transmit it, and then delete themselves.
Yes.
Wait, if these programs vaporize immediately, how do the hackers actually make money off this? If they aren't sticking around to extort you or siphon data over time, what's the business model?
Well, the business model relies entirely on volume and division of labor. It's known as malware as a service.
Laz.
Right. The people writing the code have realized that maintaining persistence on a victim's machine is just too risky. It gives antivirus software time to detect them.
Ah, that makes sense.
So the malware is designed to be a smash-and-grab operation. It gets in, uses the local APIs to decrypt and exfiltrate the databases, and then self-destructs before you notice any performance degradation.
Okay, so it's like a stolen car ring.
Yeah, great way to put it.
The guy who writes the malware is just the lockpick manufacturer. He sells tools to the car thief. The thief steals the car, but immediately flips it to a chop shop.
Exactly.
And the chop shop sells the engine to the final buyer. No one individual has to know how to execute the entire heist.
That is a perfect framework for understanding Luma Stealer, which the source uses as a prime example of this ecosystem.
Right, Luma.
The operators of Luma are the tool manufacturers. They continually develop the malware, updating its evasion techniques, and then they lease it to affiliates.
And the affiliates are the car thieves.
Yes, they handle the distribution through malicious advertising or phishing.
And the disruption of Luma in May 2025 gives us a real window into just how massive that franchise is.
It was huge.
Microsoft and international partners took action against Luma's infrastructure. In just a two-month period, Microsoft identified over 394,000 infected Windows devices and took down about 2,300 malicious domains.
And the U.S. Department of Justice added that the FBI identified at least 1.7 million instances where Luna C2 was used to steal information.
1.7 million instances. That's wild.
It is. This division of labor drastically reduces the technical barrier to entry for cybercrime.
Because everyone just does their one specific job.
Exactly. You have malware developers maintaining the tool, distributors getting the infections, log market operators organizing the terabytes of stolen data.
Then access brokers, right.
Right. Access brokers sifting through those logs to identify which credentials belong to high-value corporate targets. And finally, downstream criminals who purchase those specific logs to conduct the actual fraud, account takeover, or extortion.
Because they've grabbed a comprehensive profile of your life in seconds and sold it to specialists, untangling yourself from an infection is incredibly complex.
It's a nightmare.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Well, and honestly, alarming. The most critical pieces of data in that Stealer log are the session cookies and authentication tokens.
This is the scariest part.
I need to make sure I fully grasp the mechanics of this. Usually, if I realize I've clicked a bad link, the conventional wisdom is to immediately go in and change my passwords.
Right. That's what we've all been taught.
But if an attacker steals my session token, they can replay my authenticated session. Are you saying that even if I change my password, the attacker is still logged into my account?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you'll see why the security industry is scrambling.
Yes.
That is exactly the scenario.
Unbelievable.
When you log into a webmail client or a financial portal, you provide your password and you complete your multi-factor authentication.
Right. I put in the text code.
Exactly. Then the server validates your identity and issues your browser a cryptographically signed session cookie, often a JSON web token.
Okay.
It's essentially a digital VIP wristband that says, this browser has proven its identity. Allow it to navigate the site without asking for credentials on every single page.
Which is how I can open a new tab and still be logged into my email.
Precisely. But if an info stealer extracts that VIP wristband from your browser's local storage and transfers it to the attacker's machine, the server cannot distinguish between your browser and the attacker's browser.
Because the wristband looks legitimate.
Right. The server just sees a cryptographically valid wristband. It doesn't prompt for the password again. It doesn't trigger the second factor authentication app on your phone.
Mayor.
If you change your password, you are just changing the lock on the front door. But the attacker is already sitting on your digital couch. They completely bypass the authentication sequence.
That fundamentally breaks the standard incident response playbook. And, you know, this threat completely blurs the lines between personal risk and corporate risk.
It really does.
The source highlights that employees frequently check corporate email or access cloud infrastructure from unmanaged home computers, a machine that also runs their personal gaming software, browser extensions, and family accounts.
And that creates a catastrophic vulnerability for regulated institutions.
Right.
a household device that gets infected via a cracked video game becomes the direct entry point into a highly secure corporate network.
Because the malware grabs everything.
Exactly. The malware steals the active corporate session tokens right alongside the personal ones. The boundary between consumer security and enterprise security just evaporates.
The Verizon 2025 Data Breach Investigations Report, data cited in the source, reinforces how prevalent this is. Compromised credentials were the initial access vector in 22% of all the breaches they reviewed.
That's nearly a quarter of all breaches.
And in the median case, only 49% of an infected user's passwords across different services were distinct.
Meaning over half the passwords are reused? So a single device infection exposes multiple, completely unrelated accounts.
It just cascades.
And furthermore, organizations often suffer from myopia. They focus heavily on recent infections and completely overlook historical exposure.
Oh, like old data.
Right. The source details a massive investigation by Google's Mandiant into a threat campaign targeting Snowflake, a major cloud data platform.
I remember reading this part.
Yeah, threat actors utilized credentials that were previously obtained through InfoStealer infections to access customer-managed database environments.
And the most shocking part of that Mandiant report was the age of the data. Some of those credentials had remained valid since InfoStealer infections dating all the way back to 2020.
Yep, 2020.
They exposed around 165 organizations. I mean, how does a stolen password from 4 years ago still grant access to a modern cloud database?
It boils down to a failure in basic identity hygiene. The credentials simply hadn't been rotated by the users.
For 4 years.
I know. And more importantly, those accounts were not protected by strong, enforced multi-factor authentication, and they lacked network controls, like IP allow listing, which would have restricted logins to known corporate offices or VPNs.
Ah, okay.
So stolen credentials, if left unchecked, they retain their value indefinitely in the underground economy.
So if these downstream attackers have the right password, a valid session token, and they meticulously reconstruct my device fingerprint, how do companies actually spot them?
That is the million-dollar question.
Because traditional security alerts must be entirely blind to this. If I'm an IT defender, the login looks perfectly biologically human.
That is the defining challenge of modern defense right now. The attacker authenticates with correct credentials and uses an existing valid session.
Right.
Geolocation filtering, like checking if a login comes from a strange country, is increasingly useless because criminals utilize residential proxy networks.
Wait, residential proxies? How does that bypass a location check?
Well, the attackers route their malicious traffic through compromised Internet of Things devices, like a vulnerable smart TV or a home router that's located in your actual zip code.
No way.
Yeah. So when the bank's security system checks the origin of the login, it sees a local IP address from a standard residential internet provider. It blends right in with normal traffic.
That is wild.
Verizon found that this kind of sophisticated credential stuffing traffic represented a median of 19% of daily authentication attempts, jumping to 25% for enterprise organizations.
A quarter of all enterprise logins are just automated systems trying stolen keys through local IP addresses.
It's an invisible siege.
So what is the defense playbook? I mean, how do we actually build a resilient control stack against an adversary that perfectly mimics the user?
The source outlines 6 critical layers for a resilient control stack, anchored in the philosophy of defense in depth.
Okay, so you can't just rely on one perimeter.
Exactly. Yeah. You can't rely on a single perimeter. The first layer remains basic device security. Patching vulnerabilities, deploying endpoint protection, and training staff to recognize social engineering tactics like fake AI installers.
Sure, the basics.
But the paradigm shift really happens in the second layer, identity assurance.
Meaning we have to get beyond just passwords and basic text message codes.
Right. CISA, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, is heavily pushing for phishing-resistant multi-factor authentication. We are talking specifically about FIDO-based security keys or passkeys.
Okay, FIDO keys.
It's crucial to understand why these are fundamentally different from traditional MFA. If you use a text message code or a time-based app, a sophisticated attacker can use an adversary-in-the-middle proxy.
Basically a fake website.
Yeah, they set up a fake login page, intercept your code in real time, and pass it to the real website.
They just hand the code off before it expires.
Exactly. But FIDO-based authentication relies on public key cryptography that is mathematically bound to the actual domain you are visiting.
Oh, so the math only works for the real site.
Precisely. If you are on a fake proxy site, the cryptographic challenge just fails. the attacker cannot intercept and reuse the authentication. It provides exponentially stronger protection against stolen credentials.
Okay, that solves the credential stuffing, but it doesn't solve the session token problem we discussed earlier.
No, it doesn't.
Because the attacker already has the VIP wristband, they aren't interacting with the FIDO key at all.
Which brings us to the third layer. Session governance. Institutions must drastically shorten unnecessary session lifetimes. A token just cannot remain valid indefinitely.
Right.
Furthermore, the architecture needs to support continuous authentication. Systems should revoke sessions immediately after any material account change, like a password reset.
That makes a ton of sense.
And ideally, they should bind the session token to the specific device state, so if the token is moved to a different machine, it instantly invalidates.
You basically force everyone holding a wristband back through the front door to check their IDs again?
Yes, exactly. And because no preventative control is perfect, the fourth and sixth layers involve behavioral and transaction monitoring.
Okay, looking for weird activity.
Right. The strongest detection models no longer look at a login in isolation. They analyze the identity, the device, the session, and the subsequent transactions as a single continuum.
So you have to connect the dots across the entire user journey.
Because a login originating from a local residential IP with a valid token might look perfectly fine.
Looks normal.
But if that seemingly normal login is followed immediately by an MFA device registration, a password change, and then a rapid transfer of cryptocurrency to an unknown wallet.
Yeah, that velocity of actions is a massive red flag.
Exactly. The activity profile wildly departs from the customer's established behavior.
So when that behavioral red flag goes up, how does an organization practically respond? Because earlier we established that just running an antivirus scan and deleting the malware off the laptop doesn't cut it anymore.
It doesn't.
The data is already gone.
Fixing this requires a fully integrated cyber fin crime response. Cybersecurity teams, fraud departments, and anti-money laundering units cannot operate in silos anymore.
They have to talk to each other.
Yes. If the IT department just sees a malware alert, wipes the laptop, and closes the ticket, they've completely missed the fact that a complete digital identity was exported and is currently being sold.
They cured the symptom on the device, but ignored the disease spreading through the network.
An effective response requires assuming the entire digital identity is compromised and then working backward.
Okay.
You isolate the infected device immediately. Then, the victim must change their credentials, but they have to do it from a completely different, mathematically clean device.
Right, because their main device can't be trusted.
Exactly. The organization must aggressively invalidate all active sessions, manually review any recently registered devices or MFA keys, and check beneficiaries for unauthorized fund movements. It really requires treating an endpoint malware infection as a full-scale financial crime investigation.
So what does this all mean? If we zoom out from the mechanics of Windows APIs, JSON web tokens, and this whole malware as a service economy, the core takeaway from this source is a massive paradigm shift in risk management.
Massive.
Infostealer malware must absolutely not be treated just as an IT endpoint issue. It is a severe financial crime event. It is a total identity compromise.
Yeah.
The malware is merely the extraction tool. The commodification and sale of your digital life is the actual business.
This raises an important question, though. A profoundly challenging one for the future of privacy and remote work.
Okay, I'm listening.
We explored how the source explicitly demonstrates that an employee's infected home computer, or, you know, a personal gaming rig, can act as the silent entry point to breach a highly regulated global institution.
Simply because they logged into a cloud portal or checked their corporate email on that machine once?
Right. And it creates a massive privacy paradox. If personal devices and home networks are now effectively the weakest link for global corporate security, how long until employers start demanding visibility into those private environments?
Oh, wow.
Are we heading toward a future where, to protect the enterprise from stealer logs, your employer legally requires surveillance, strict administrative control, or mandatory enterprise security software on the devices you use in your own home on your own time?
That is, yeah.
Are we looking at a world where your employer dictates what video games you can download in your living room just to ensure a malicious mod doesn't harvest their corporate access?
That is a heavy, very real consequence of this technology blurring the boundaries between our personal and professional lives. If an attacker can perfectly wear your face to work, your employer is inevitably going to want to know what you are doing with your face at home. Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the systems you interact with, stay curious, and after listening to this, maybe go ahead and log out of your active sessions, clear your browser databases, and look into setting up a FIDO security key. We'll leave you to think about those digital body snatchers hiding in your browser. See you next time.